You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
Hey, hello to my little film.
It's B-Movies, thanks to Mitze Bar, your source for all things NZIFF, thanks to the best place to go before or after.
You're listening to BFM. Good call. 13 minutes past 9 o'clock on this Wednesday morning, 19th of July. It's 2017. Back in 2012, something very, very unusual happened in this fair super city of ours. And to discuss that and the movie that she's made about it, the documentary she's made about it, Dr. Annie Goldson has just as our guest. Hi. You're the director of a movie that I've been wanting to see for ages. When I heard about someone was making a movie, that's Kim.com, Caught in the Web. It's going to be part of the film festival. Caught in the Web is the web of...
Well, I think there's so many webs, sort of take your pick a bit, isn't it?
He's not the
web of deceit, the web of economic, political chaos, webs that can lead to imprisonment. Don't know. You take your pick.
The character that is Kim.com is a human being, we find out in this documentary, mm-hmm. And with a colourful past, obviously a very smart guy, mm-hmm. and someone who really, really, who moved over here, I believe, with the best intentions, maybe there are a couple of reasons for maybe heading offshore out of Germany, but with the best intentions, do you think?
Well, one would think, like many people who come to New Zealand, he wanted a better world for his, or a better life for his children. You know, lots of people say that.
Please find me the most lavish house in a country that I can go move into and spend thousands and thousands and thousands of dollars on a fireworks display for free for the people that live there, and invite all the VIPs along to my house, and so then I'll get some notoriety. Please do. I mean, that's quite a good life for your children, isn't it?
Well, that was actually their second house. They intended to keep their first house in Hong Kong, where Mega Upload was launched. So, yep. So Coatesville was the second house.
So Kim, for people who don't know who Kim.com is, can you put it in a nutshell?
Well, Kim.com would be defined as a tech entrepreneur, I would think. Notorious for beginning a file-sharing website, which was a reasonably pioneering one. We have to think back to the days prior to Netflix, Spotify, etc. He set up a file-sharing website that many allege was used by lots of people for nefarious purposes, sharing valuable materials such as Hollywood movies and music.
There can be no doubt that he really has been an innovator as far as
I think
on
did.
The internet. Why you changed your name to Kim.com, I suppose.
In your documentary, you basically referenced that Mega Upload was also a kind of proto-cloud.
That's right. I think what Mega Upload showed was there was a commercial argument for cloud service. You know, it was one of the early cloud services.
And to be fair too, there was 20 other exactly ones exactly like it. But I think Kim.com, being the personality that he portrays, or the person that he likes to be known as, I think he made himself an easy target, you think?
Yeah, I mean, my understanding that Mega Upload, and I have to say, hand on my heart, I never used it.
I did. Hard out.
But I think what it was that set it aside was it was very easy to use and it looked very mainstream. It wasn't like the weird corners of the web and, you know, all of that BitTorrent stuff.
Dirty, grubby BitTorrent stuff. And what happened was that when Kim.com moved here, all the people that had a problem with that, I guess, banded together, and it caught up with him, and it resulted in a police raid on this mansion that he and his family were living in 2012. That was two helicopters, 72. That's what I thought it was 72. You say, think it's more than 72?
I know it was 70 plus.
70 plus police officers. Can you think of any rapist, murderer, or serial killer in this country that has had that many police chasing them at one time?
No, well, what sparked my interest was a sense of theatre, you know, having been brought up in
New Zealand,
I've never seen anything like that. So I started to think, well, why is this theatre happening? You know, what is lying underneath this display?
Yeah, is there a Pablo Escobar under this this cheery German fella?
And given most of us had not even, I mean, Kim.com is a reasonably reclusive character, although he's, in quotes, larger than life. You don't really see him walking around Coatesville or Auckland. So he was quite reclusive, and I don't think most of us knew who he was, despite the firework display.
Yeah, that's the first I ever heard of him, when I went, hey, did someone pay, is this private person pay for this firework display? Oh, you let them in the country, for God's sake, give them citizenship.
Well, and that might be what our immigration officials said too.
Speaking of Peter Thiel, but the situation is though that he became the victim of one of the largest police operations ever in the country. Ever it's ever been. Like there's the footage in your documentary shows armed like squads and squads of armed police. Apart from the hilarious shot of the person trying to jump over the front fence, you dick. They could have just opened the gate, Sarah. It's this tall. Do you see it? It's like waist high. Open the gate, walk through. It's a gate. No one's stopping you. There was no one. You know, this is what blew me away at the time. Is that how? Like, what did they think was going to happen? What sort of person did they think was living in this house?
I know. I mean, I would say even Kim's worst enemies, and he does have a fair few, wouldn't see him as a violent man.
No.
I mean, I think they could have rung the doorbell and issued a document. And he may have even given them a cup of coffee.
Yeah.
Is that then what interested you in making a film on this personality, the fact that there was this almost internationally deliberate show of force?
Well, that's what piqued my interest initially, because it was so exceptional for New Zealand. And I thought, God, something must be going on. And then I started to think, you know, there are all of these issues. How do we consume media today? How do we consume knowledge as much as entertainment? You know, how has the internet transformed the way that, you know, information circulates? There's also issues around privacy and surveillance that his case brought up. There are issues around sovereignty. You know, what does it mean that we're marching in unison with the FBI? You know, those are many issues I felt that needed exploration.
Trying to say, look, we're just as badass as you guys. Look, watch us get him. We'll get him for you. We'll get him. He's in a panic room. The subject's in the panic room.
But that to be said, as an independent filmmaker too, you know, I think there are issues around piracy and infringement that can impact a lot on, you know, the incomes of hardworking filmmakers. So
do you need to borrow some money?
Look, I'm one of the fortunate ones that has a day job. The fine university, which I work hard for as well.
There's I found it fascinating watching your interviews with the industry, like the film industry folk from the I was watching their overcompensating. I thought they were completely overcompensating, just trying so hard to say what a bad man Kim.com was and have Mega Upload. It's just bad. You guys don't understand how bad. It's just like, you know, blink. You're lying. That's the impression I got from all those interviews that I watched when I watched your documentary. Just like that, they were all members of a huge, massive, like hard to fathom how big it is industry over there in the United States or worldwide, I guess. Who were caught completely off guard and missed the boat so entirely that they're so embarrassed about it that they really need a fall guy.
Well, and to, you know, give them a bit of support there, Kim did paint himself as Dr. Evil. Hmm. But there's very much a sort of new world, old world thing going on. There's very different things, like different senses of humour.
But just because you've got a number plate that says God doesn't mean you actually are God.
Somebody's just texting saying, could it be the many pictures he's posted on the net of him wielding assault rifles and shotguns? He has quite a colourful personality.
He's definitely a colourful personality, but as far as I know, the only ones of shotguns were once when he was clay shooting with pigeons. Right. And the other, they were duck shooting, which I'm not a big fan of, but hey, it's not against the law.
But otherwise, those ducks would get us.
I think it's a very
as long as it's not the red turtle.
There's can I mention this without being a spoiler? When you find out about his upbringing as a kid, I thought that was very interesting. That was really telling, and his reason for never touching alcohol. Really interesting.
I mean, I also think there's something. We have produced this thing that I call an internet entrepreneur, and you look at these characters that have emerged, you know, through that wave when the internet stopped being just a little playground and became a huge commercial prospect. And you look at the Peter Thiels and Kim.coms, and even I saw a documentary on McAfee, the virus guy, antivirus guy. There's something about these characters that tend to be quite anachronistic, larger than life, very hard to pinpoint politically. They seem to be like creatures of this era.
Speaking of politically, the documentary follows not only the police raid and the subsequent to and fro and after that, but also Kim.com's venture into local politics, into New Zealand politics, which was really quite mental when you think back to the time. It was like it was crazy, wasn't it, that he did that? And you know, it sort of culminates in the big show at the Town Hall, and he makes it. I remember watching that, and as I was telling Sarah earlier on about, and watching him when he got Edward Snowden, Julian Assange, and you know, all together on a
Glenn Greenwald,
all those guys, all there on stage talking live, you know, via Skype or whatever it was, and I remember watching that and going, well, that's some really interesting. Like, yeah, he hasn't delivered an envelope with the here's your walking papers, Prime Minister, but there was a lot that we learned in that couple of hours. And then the news headlines straight afterwards were like, Kim.com smirked during blah blah blah, and that was it. It blew my mind. And so I think there's a bit in the documentary where you tackle that part of it, where there's a responsibility of the media to actually have got their heads around the story a bit better.
Yeah, well, certainly Kim tackled them in the press conference afterwards, but I do feel it was a problem that Kim set up everyone's expectations. And then actually what was really probably more important that was delivered at the moment of truth, which is the possibility or the likelihood we are all under mass surveillance, got kind of lost.
Yeah.
And I think it was, even I, you know, with my politics, which I won't talk about at the moment, when I watched so close to the election, when I watched some of them really talk negatively about John Key, I thought this is not going to play in the hinterlands very
well. Welcome
to
my world. Yep. No, that doesn't do me. It's never done me the world of good.
But I mean, I thought it was fascinating. I mean, in a way, and I liked what David Fisher said. He said this is sort of the rock star of the opposition, that, you know, America in particular doesn't think there's anything wrong with their copyright regime. They think it's okay to conduct mass surveillance. There's all sorts of things, you know, they don't think something
like...
Well,
so do we now. You know, the law's changed, so okay.
Yeah. I know. I think there's huge implications that were lost. You know, for me, privacy is a really, really important thing because we self-censor ourselves. Populations that are spied on are passive and meek. They don't want to talk politics. They can't really talk business. They can't develop critique. They may not even be able to carry out their intimate lives without the fear of being watched.
Which is a point that's made in the doco, which I thought was really cool too, where Kim's sort of talking about the fact that not only was he being spied on, when it all came out to the extent of how, you know, the surveillance he was under, that his personal private emails and phone conversations with his wife were all listened to over, you know, quite a long period, and you could just see how that's really hurt him, you know, that sort of stuff. Where do you think where do you think it goes to from here, the story that you spent 3 years documenting? Mm.
Well, I mean, it's obviously an ongoing story, and that was an issue as a filmmaker, like, where do I stop this film? So I always decided to stop it after the first extradition hearing. Mm. I mean, a lot of the legal wranglings that went on, the extradition hearing was delayed for 3 or 4 years because there were so many abuses of process, effectively. And whatever you think of Kim.com, you know, within a democratic legal system, if someone's rights are abrogated, you have the right to go to court.
Yep.
So he exercised that right. And whatever anyone thinks, that should be a right that we all respect, I think.
Totally.
But because it dragged on and on and on, because so many of our institutions made so many mistakes, you know, I thought, will I ever finish this film?
Right.
But finally, the first extradition hearing, which found that all of the four of them were eligible for extradition, of course, found against them. So I sort of finished it there. Which was canny as a filmmaker because you can always end, you can always change the end credit thing, because it's certainly not the end of the
refresh
story.
I mean, I've always been a believer that I don't think he's guilty of what they say he, you know, what they're accusing him of. I can't imagine why that if you had the power and the might of that industry trying to shut you down, how he's still around. Like, you know, if they really had something on him, surely he would be in jail by now easily.
Well, I think one thing that Kim.com did is fight back, and fight back with considerable chutzpah.
Yeah, good on him, eh, for that.
I think many people don't, which is not to say I don't think there might be a case to answer. I mean, that's not for me to say, although I had to say it was like going to bloody law school making this film, because not only is copyright law incredibly complicated and regionally and territorially determined, but also extradition law is really complicated too. So that exercised the old brain.
What about the translation stuff? Oh, made me sick.
It did.
I'm not going to spoil it because there's lots to see in the documentary. The documentary is called Kim.com, Caught in the Web. And when does it play at the film festival?
It's showing the premiere here. It has shown at South by Southwest in Texas, which was fun. And it showed in...
Was it nice to see it over there, away from New Zealand?
It was really interesting. And, you know, the tech sector, the kind of people that have grown up with Kim.com, I've known him as Dr. Kimball ever since he was a sort of early hacker. So they were all really interested. And there's been some really great Q&As. I think it's showing on the 28th or 29th.
It's on the 29th at the ASB Waterfront Theatre,
yes,
as well as the
Flash New Theatre, which is cool.
I don't think they've ever used it as a screen theatre before. It's the 29th at ASB Waterfront Theatre and the 31st, and then it shows at Event Cinemas Westgate on August the 6th.
And it is going around New Zealand. It's also going to be showing in Buenos Aires, so I'm going to go off to Buenos Aires, and also in Melbourne. But I think we've got tickets, don't we?
We do.
We've got a double pass to give away. To any of those?
No, it is to the 29th. So as long as you are available on the 29th and can make your way to the ASB Waterfront Theatre, which is on Horsley Street.
With a friend.
How should we give it away, do you think?
You mean we have to come up
with... What question should we ask the listeners?
What massive, great, big, pretend animals... There's one of two animals I can think of. Did Kim.com have in the grounds of his sprawling Coatesville mansion? They may still be there, but I would imagine they're not. It's a reminder of those sordid times. Hello, are you there, caller?
Hey, Mikey.
Hello, the answer is?
I think it was a rhino.
There was a rhino. Other answer would have been giraffe as well.
Yeah.
A big fake giraffe or a big fake rhino. Who wouldn't have that, though? You know? Pablo Escobar had runaway rogue hippos, but they were real. And look what happened to him.
Yeah, I thought it'd be more appropriate to put a few giant, oversized gorillas in there, but, I suppose this is corp.
Do you think, because he's massive? He's a massive human being. Like, he's really tall as well, which is...
Living large, for sure.
All right, okay. And what's your name?
Dion,
congratulations. Stay there. We'll get your details after this. Please hold the line. Dr. Annie Goldson's documentary, Kim.com, Caught in the Web. Thank you, Annie, for coming in.
You're welcome.
Have a wonderful tour with your film.
I will.
Are you working on anything else? Are you going to knock out another documentary?
I've got one that could be seen as a bit of reaction, actually. I'm a bit sick of the world of male techies and cars. So.
Oh, really? Yeah. Really? It made it sound so cool, though. Okay. Cool. Look, come and tell us about it when you're ready to.
Okay.
Any hints?
Oh, well, it's actually on the Global Women's March that happened as kind of a response to the election of Donald Trump. What happened globally, so we're trying to crowdsource interviews from women wherever they march, which included Saudi Arabia, you know.
That's cool.
That's because Donald Trump got voted in as the President of the United States of America. How about that? We're still spinning.
It was kind of a trigger, but women are obviously addressing issues within each of their own countries too, which we're also trying to look at. So that's the plan anyway.
Please visit us again.
Yeah,
we'll do. Cool. I'm just over the road.
Thank you very much. should we do a review now as well?
I reckon we should fang into that thing there.
Fang away.
Just fanging. Fang with us if you like, and if you're on school holidays, fang together as a team.
And right now, you know, we're just maxing in the studio. We're hailing from East Oakland, California, and sometimes it gets a little hectic out there. But right now, you know, we're going to up you on how we just chill.
Dial up 7 digits, call up Bridget, her man's a midget. Plus she got fringe, yo, I can dig it. Here's a 40 swigging, you know it's frigid. I got him chilling in the cooler, break out the ruler. Damn, that's the fattest dog I ever seen. The weather's heat in Cali, getting weeded makes it feel like Maui. Now we feel the good vibrations. So many females, so much inspiration.
This is how we chill from 93 to.
Hello, Amanda. Hello. Hi. Welcome. Now, we've been pushing things. Oftentimes we get jammed up there, but it's time for you to give us your review of one of the films in the film festival. What have you got for it? What have you got there?
I have Quest. So it was really good. I mean, it's by Jonathan Olszewski, and from all Googling that I can tell, this is his first
research,
film.
Research.
Very important research. This is his first film. It's a documentary from the States. So it's basically, he just kind of took footage for about 10 years. So he followed this family, family. Yeah. And it kind of, I don't know where he started and ended taking footage, but the film starts with the Rainey family and the kind of protagonist of the film working on the kind of going around his community helping to campaign for Obama's re-election.
Right.
So that's kind of where we're just dropped into.
What's his community like?
So he's in Philadelphia.
Yep.
Kind of on the north side, which is like a quote-unquote rough part of town or whatever. And so he is walking around there. All the Obama re-election signs are up, and so you're just kind of dropped into that straight away, and then you're taken through these basically 8, 9, 10 years, and just for timeline, like, it's not a spoiler of anything, but it kind of ends with Trump's campaign, right?
Yeah. We're going to look back in history, and this being a pivotal point in the history of the United States of America.
Yeah, and it's not. Like, I think a lot of documentaries that are trying to tackle this kind of period of time could go very broad, right? And use a lot of kind of news footage and cut that all together to, like, try and paint this portrait of this political time or whatever. I think what is really good about this film is that it's not that. It's very specific. It's about this one family and their community, and they are a big part of their community. He runs, like, what is he described as this kind of community recording studio, so anyone can just come in and record their stuff. And his wife Christina she works in, like, a homeless shelter in the community. Their daughter goes to the local school. Like, they're very much a part of their community. There's this big event that happens in the middle of the film that I'm not going to spoil,
because
it is a very big thing, but
it's only 105 minutes of the movie, it's 10 years of following a family around. That's amazing.
It's interesting what they chose to keep in and leave out as well, with all the political. Like, I mean, 10 years, a lot of.
Like, 10 weeks there. Worth of footage would be a lot of footage to have to comb through, but to decide what to highlight in 10 years. So, did you enjoy it?
Yes, absolutely. Yeah.
Recommend it?
Yeah, definitely. It's definitely. like, even though it is so specific, it's very, it says a lot about everything, which I think is the thing when you go that specific with politics and everything that's going on in the States over the last 10 years.
So it still feels like it was done, you know, like it's relevant and recent.
Sort of. Oh, I mean, yeah, absolutely.
It must be, yeah, 'cause, I mean, it seems like only yesterday that Donald Trump became the president, remember? I mean,
is it sad? Because obviously there must have been a lot of
sad! Promise. Donald Trump became the president!
I mean, across the journey of the movie, because there seemed to be so much promise during the Obama administration.
Yeah, exactly. I think
rounding off from Trump.
It doesn't end with, like, it ends with footage of the family rather than Trump's kind of election speech or anything like that. But in near to the end, it does show one of Trump's campaign. It's not a spoiler. Okay. It's one of his kind of campaign speeches saying that African Americans should vote for him because what have they got to lose, kind of thing. And you see, you see all their reactions to that, and that's quite sad. And it's like, not so much sad in the film, but just sad to think about how that community is going to be affected by his election.
Because it's a dawning, rising feeling of,
Absolutely.
Oh, so this is showing during the film festival, July 24th at the Academy Cinema, July 28th at the Academy, August the 5th at the Academy, and then on August the 6th at Event Cinemas in Monaco. And then the movie is called Quest, directed by Jonathan Olszewski,
I think.
Cool, thank you very much.
You've been listening to Beer Movies, thanks to Metze Bar.
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/BCasts.